20 days, one historic move, an unbelievable journey. Melania from the Amazon MGM Studios captures the one-of-a-kind transition into the White House, showcasing the planning, the pressure, and personal moments that come with stepping into the role of the First Lady for a second time. From logistical complexities to decisions made behind closed doors, the film brings you closer to Mrs. Trump and her family as they return to the nation's capital. See what history looks like before the doors officially open. Melania arrives exclusively in theaters January 30th, 2026.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hope everyone's having a wonderful day so far. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. Coming up later this hour, we'll be joined by G. Van Fleet. She is the author of Made in America, The Hidden History of How the U.S. Enabled Communist China and Created Our Greatest Threat. That is her newest book out. We're going to talk to her about the rise of communism in the United States and how it is all being engineered by the Chinese government right under our noses. And they're using our freedoms and our laws to destroy us from within. And that's always said how the communists always said how they were going to take us over. Anyway, so that's going to be super interesting. Also, we're going to talk about Tom Homan. He was just on, he just held a press conference. And I will say that Tom Homan, even though he was speaking very softly, you know, daddy's back, right? Daddy's in the house, right? All right, let's go to G. Van Fleet, author of her new book, Made in America, The Hidden History of How the U.S. Enabled Communist China and Created Our Greatest Threat. I find this to be absolutely fascinating. G, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
This is so interesting and such a timely topic. One of the big things that I've always wondered about and I've always had a problem with and no one seems to even talk about, but I know you do, is China using the 14th Amendment of this country that anyone who walks off a plane and gives birth in this country, that child is automatically an American citizen. And the Chinese have for years, probably even decades, been sending women and also they're wealthy, they're elite, come here to a birth hotel, a birth tourism hotel a lot of times in right in California and also the Marianas Islands, Saipan, where they will have their baby there because it's American territory or a state, and then their child is a U.S. citizen. Why is this such a big industry for China?
Well, this is something that haven't been really reported until recently, and that shocked people. Yeah, we don't know how many hundreds of thousands of such babies, and by the time they're 18, they're citizens, and then they can sponsor their parents to come here, and we don't know who they are. Mostly, as you said, from the elite, because only those people can afford to do all this. But again, this is our problem. They just use the loophole. We right. just never really understand the threat of communism. That's why we just have all these opportunities for them to explore, such as buying land. You know, it's we allow them. So I always say, yes, CCP is a threat. Communist China is our greatest threat. But the problem is here. We never understand the threat, and we make it possible for them to absolutely come to this country, now become embedded in every fabric of our society. And this is absolutely something that people need to understand.
Yeah, and that's what bothers me. Pretty much this entire conversation is going to be how they exploit our freedoms that we have here, and they use them against us to take us down and take us over. So this fleet of kids, if you will, right? This whole like it's going to start. I believe they say somewhere around 2030 is when the first wave of these kids are going to becoming citizens, and then they can come to this country, as you said, then they can bring their parents. But most of them are connected to the CCP in some way, shape, or form. So are we looking at just thousands and thousands, wave after wave after wave, of these young men and women coming here who are actually agents of the Chinese government?
That's absolutely possible. The other thing that people don't talk about is that up to 97% of CCP elites, I mean, of the highest level, have children and grandchildren here in America. Most of them either have green card or citizenship. What do you think their loyalty is? Mostly, I would safely bet their loyalty is to the CCP. So yeah, we have them everywhere already. And a lot of the, you know, people will say, you know, oh, the Chinese people, they're anti-communists because they lived through the brutal regime of communism. Not so. So many of them actually vote for communists here, vote for the Democratic Party. And a lot of them just never really understand that, communism in China, you know who they are, but communists here, they can't recognize. Actually, today, it is nothing less than just the Democratic Party. So there's a lot of challenge. And Americans never really learned to vet. You know, talking about Ilhan Omar, her father is a warlord. And a lot of the Chinese people here we let in, their parents were the CCP that working against our country.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Democrat Party. And what is the difference between the Democrat Party, the Democrat Socialists of America, because they're like, we're not socialists, we're democratic socialists, and communists. Is there a difference?
No. It's just, put a pretty word there. No, there's no difference. And when I say Communist Democratic Party, I mean that the party has been hijacked by radicals and they're communists. I don't mean that every member, but every member of the Democratic Party should understand that their party is no longer the old Democratic Party. It is, in fact, Communist Party. The policies, the ideologies is indistinguishable from the CCP's.
Yeah, and so they just put the fun word Democrat in front of it. So that's okay because we're not communists, we're Democrats. Are you surprised? I know you escaped China. How did you get out, by the way? How did that happen? Because I didn't think that China just allows people to leave the country if you want to leave. Because we saw waves and waves of Chinese come across the border when Joe Biden was president. They just came across the border, military-age men. China doesn't just let them out, right? They didn't just let you leave, right?
Well, this is a long story, but anyway, China did not allow anybody to leave during the Mao time, which is from 1949 to 1976 after it died. And then China opened it up because they know they need the help from the United States. Otherwise, they're going to go totally collapse. And then for a long while, Americans accepted Chinese students, and I was one of them. I came here to study. And a lot of them came in the early 1980s. They are really the ones who love the freedom because they just escaped the worst part of the Cultural Revolution. People like me, and we have fresh memory, not just memory, we live through it. But later on, there's a lot of students that came here, they've been totally indoctrinated. They went to the elite universities in America, and then they feel that China is better. They feel like they absolutely feel like America is on the way out. And then what happens is that they come to the university here, the professors reinforce that idea. Professors from the elite universities tell them that America is on the way out and China is going to replace it. That is, again, the problem is always here. I want people to look inside because no one can beat America except the traitors from within.
Right. But that's what we were always told. Wasn't it Khrushchev who said, we will take you from within? We're like, we're not even going to know it. We'll take you from within. We're like the frog in the pot of water, that old analogy. You know, turn the heat up and the frog doesn't even realize it's boiling. And by the time it realizes it can't get out of the pot of water. And that's the problem there. So, you know, also buying land. Let's talk about that. We do allow people to buy land from foreign countries, and we do allow China to buy Chinese citizens who are in this country legally to buy land, especially farmland and land outside of military bases. Is that something? I obviously think that that's a really, really bad thing. But how do we stop that and say only for Chinese you can't buy land? If you're an American citizen or you're in this country legally, you can't buy land. How does America do that?
Yeah, in Florida, they passed the bill that not allow any foreign nationals, and they have a list of countries, one of China, Iran, you know, those totalitarian countries don't allow them to buy land. You know what happened? The Chinese here, those are controlled by the CCP, staged demonstration here, and cry out racism, Asian hate. You know, this is what happened in America. There are just so many organizations and groups of people controlled by CCP, funded by CCP, and they will do anything to against any measures that will stop the CCP further gain ground here in America. And also, CCP has been funding all the civil unrest from BMM to pro-Hamas to anti-ICE. CCP is absolutely our worst enemy, and still the Democrats talking about our partner. They still, even today, some of the people that are here on CNN still say China is our competitor and partner. No, it's our enemy, our worst enemy. Because during the Cold War, we know Soviet Union was over there, we were here. Now China, everywhere in our country.
Yeah, exactly. We keep going back to the CCP and their involvement in pretty much everything, and especially our colleges. And Newsweek had an interesting piece, and they actually say in it, the minutes of the Democratic Socialist of America's meetings show that participants are discussing contracts with officials from China's ruling party in the name of anti-imperialism, with some members saying the organization should avoid topics that are sensitive for Beijing, such as China's threats to invade Taiwan, security crackdown in Hong Kong, abuses of the Uyghur Muslim minority. They also discuss visiting China. We know Tim Walz took many trips to China, took students to China, which sounds amazing. You know, go tour China. That sounds great. But I think the students are very susceptible. So we are where we are. Let's put it all together. We've got this fleet of kids that are going to be coming starting in about 2030 as they hit 18 years old, and they're going to bring their parents, and it's going to be more and more and more Chinese, but they're all citizens. So we got to let them come. So now they come here, they can vote in our elections. They can run for office in this country. You add to that the American kids who are being indoctrinated in schools and the rise of the CCP. And I think that they are behind. I think China is behind a lot of the rioting that you're seeing against Trump and the push to stop Trump. This to me is like a perfect storm. It's been in the making for decades. It's finally coming to fruition. How do we stop it?
Well, I hope that we will redefine the 14th Amendment. You can't let anyone come here, and just because they're born here, they become citizens. And not only that, they have all the privileges of bringing them up, entire family here, not just their parents and their siblings and their cousins and whatever. Yeah, no, we can't do that. We have to realize that our constitution, our freedom, our democratic system, it's really, really open to exploitation by communists. We have to understand the nature of communism, and that's what my book is about.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have written other books as well. So it's not just this book, but you have had other books that you have written that have been very successful and very warning. And I highly recommend that people read these books. But one last thing, I had said that I think that China is behind the riots that are breaking out all across the country in the name of immigration. I think that they are a big money driver through laundering this money through all of these Democrat organizations. Do you agree with that? Do you see China's fingerprints on these riots across the country?
Absolutely. Every one of them. And this is the thing that the Chinese Communist Party have been so successful here, infiltrating just every part of our country. Why? They have a partner. That is the Communist Democratic Party. And that's why. That's why this, CCP has been so successful. So in order to defeat CCP, we have to look inside. And it's here. Our enemies next to us, they are not like over there, as in China across the ocean. They are right here among us.
Yeah, and I think there's got to be a lot of deprogramming to stop this, especially with this young generation coming up. But I think the ones that are out there rioting and putting their lives on the line, some of them are in their 30s. And then, of course, you have the aging hippies. I'm not as worried about them because they're older. You know, I'm not as worried. But the young people, when you see this confluence of that, these people who have been indoctrinated in school and they're useful idiots, you know, Lenin's old saying, they're useful idiots.
Absolutely. Combine that
with this group of American citizens coming out of China, and as you said, bringing their entire family, aunts, cousins, uncles, this one, that one, everybody, bringing them in here, and they get citizenship. We're going to talk about them voting, as I said, running for government, etc., and you're going to see, a huge change in this country that we're not going to like at all. How long do you think it's going to be before we see this all go sideways?
I hope as soon as possible, but everything's so difficult. Everything you do here, there's a Democratic Party out there stopping it. So, but I think the first thing is American people have to realize.
Yeah.
And the danger, and hopefully they will help to push their representatives and to do things that will protect us.
Yeah. Well, Xi, we got to run, but I also want to tell people your book, Mao's America, A Survivor's Warning, I think is great reading for kids. If you have a kid in high school, college, try to get to them before the Chinese do and the communists do. Mao's America, and your new book is Made in America. You can follow her on X at X Van Fleet. Follow her there. Thank you so much. We appreciate you and everything that you're trying to do. And thank you for making us a little smarter this morning. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right. We've got your calls, 866-408-7669, coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. All right, birth tourism. You just heard from Xi Van Fleet. She is Chinese. She escaped. And talking about what they're doing. And it, right under our noses, buying up land. They're coming over and having children here. Did you know more than 70% of the newborns in Saipan are Chinese birth tourists? And it's an American territory. And they have a 45-day visa-free visitation rule. And so it allows them to go in and just have children that are now American citizens. We do not track birth tourism. America does not. We probably should. But are you concerned about any of this? Are you concerned about this? You know, the Supreme Court, the Trump administration, it has a case going before the Supreme Court. It's going to be argued in the spring about the interpretation of the 14th Amendment, which until really the 60s wasn't a thing. and then once we started having more illegal immigration, it became a thing. And they're expecting a decision by the summer. Is it time to say, no, you can't just come here, walk off a plane, have a baby, that kid hits 18, they're a citizen, and then, you know, 21, they can bring you and the whole family here? We're being exploited. I'll take your calls coming up, 866-408-7669 on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In my meetings with folks so far, I was important to the governor and the AG, the Mayor Fry. We didn't agree on everything. I didn't expect to agree on anything. I've heard many people want to know why we're talking to people who they don't consider friends to the administration. Bottom line is you can't fix problems if you don't have discussions. I didn't come to Minnesota for photo ops or headlines. You haven't seen me. I came here to seek solutions.
So that was Tom Homan discussing your meeting with did he meet with Fry as well? I know he met with Walz, Tim Walz, but he did meet with Fry. Okay, thank you, Eric. So he did meet with both the governor and the mayor. And the governor seems to be a little bit more conciliatory, a little bit more willing to talk, whereas Jacob Fry, the mayor, seems to be a little bit more antagonistic, trying to find a way forward when it comes to these ICE raids, which wouldn't even be happening if they would just cooperate. Wouldn't even be happening. So we were just talking with Xi Van Fleet, who was brought up in communist China, got out. She has two books out, Mao's America. Great reading if you have a high schooler, college kid. Let them learn now so they can spot it when they go off to be indoctrinated. And her new book, Made in America. And we were talking about birth tourism and talking about how the Chinese are infiltrating. And the 14th Amendment will be heard, the argument on that will be heard in front of the Supreme Court in the spring, because it's up to interpretation the way it is written. We know what it was meant for. It was for the children of slaves, so they would then be citizens, integrate them into American society after the Civil War, right? That's what it was about. And it's been bastardized to mean something totally different for anybody who wants to walk across the border, have a baby. That baby's an American citizen, so you get to stay with the baby. I don't know where that comes from. And that kid's 18. They become a citizen. 21, they can sponsor the whole family. Everybody can come over. So we have to change our laws. Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? And if you listened or saw the Homan presser, I'd like your... We're going to go into it a little bit more coming up, but I'm curious about your impression of that. All right. Let's go to the phones, 866-408-7669, or if you can't get to the phone, tag me on a post on X at Mary Walter Radio. There's no S, and I will try to multitask and get to your comments as well. Let's head to Virginia. Hello, Hank. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? From one Jersey boy to a Jersey girl. How you doing?
I'm doing great, but see, you got out of Jersey, you went to Virginia, and now you might as well be back in Jersey.
Oh, I miss the food and the people. Great.
That's
up
the
there.
Food, yeah. I got to say the food,
oh,
yeah.
God, at least you're north.
Your new governor is a Jersey girl.
Oh, God, we don't want to talk about her. We don't like her. We had a great, the attorney general should have been governor.
Yes.
Yeah, his name is Mieres. He is just absolutely fantastic Jason guy, Mieres. But I think he'll be governor next go around. Yeah. Jason Mieres.
Yeah. So go ahead.
But I want to tell you, the whole thing with the Chinese, that's basically a Trojan horse just ready to unfold on us. But the other day, I know that Brian's from Massapequa Park. I have a couple friends from that area. And they want to change the names from all these, like, you know, teams like the Washington Redskins, you got the Guardians, the Cleveland Indians. And it just seems that they pick and choose. Well, the number one team in the National Football League is playing in the Super Bowl. They're called the Seattle Seahawks. You know where they get the name Seattle?
No.
famous Chief Seattle. He was a big Indian chief. So I'm just kind of wondering, one of the most progressive liberal cities in the country, why don't they change that name and call it the Emerald City or whatever they want to call it?
Yeah, change the names of St. Louis, change the name of Los Angeles. You know, there's a lot of names they could do that. But you know what? I think that if we go the way that our guest Xi was saying we're going to go, as we allow ourselves to be infiltrated by the communist Chinese, as we allow them to infiltrate our schools, as we allow them to buy up our farmland and control us from within, that you may find all of your cities and towns renamed, and I will be dead by then, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah. God bless America. You're doing a great job.
Thank you so much, Hank. I appreciate you joining me. So do you worry about that? Am I hyperbolizing? Like, I truly believe what is happening. We're so stupid. We are so asleep at the wheel when it comes to this infiltration by the Chinese. And we're like, it's okay. You know, they just want to come here for a better life. They want to escape communism. I'm like, no, you big dummies. That's not what's happening. But we're very willfully blind, I think, in this country. So I want to go back to Tom Homan, because I think I'm very surprised at his demeanor. I was listening to it, and I think you get a different impression when you listen to it versus when you watch it. So I did a little bit of both. And because Tom Homan's that character that you could put on, there are just some men, you can put on a beautiful, like, tailored suit just for him and everything. And by the time he walks out of the green room to the podium, he's, like, rumpled, like his shirt's untucked. Like, he's just that guy. Like, he just always looks like he's rumpled. You know, he just needs a stogie, you know, back in, like, the 40s and 50s, and he's that perfect cop character, the perfect detective character. But he was very... he was very sedate. He was very calm. And it's almost kind of, I think, this is kind of like a good cop, bad cop kind of thing that the Trump administration's doing. The bad cop being Bovino. Oh, he's terrible. So we're going to give the good cop. We're going to put Homan in. He's going to talk to you. And Tom Homan very calmly will speak to both Walz and Fry and maybe come to some kind of an agreement here, maybe get them to do it. He said, they want the criminals who are in jail. You have criminals who are in jail, who are in this country illegally. Give them to us. And they seem to not want to do that. All right, let's start at the beginning. Let's go to cut 25. This is Tom Homan talking about what they've gotten done in the last 3 days. He got here on Monday, so it's a little bit less than 3 days, and what he's done.
I've been on the ground less than three full days. I got in here Monday. President of the United States called me Monday morning and asked me to deploy here. Got here Monday evening, and I'm staying till the problem's gone. But we've made a lot of progress in the last 3 days.
Okay, so we made some progress. The problem's done. I do think that they're going to give him the people who are already in prison who are in the country illegally. I think they're going to give them that. What's going to happen, though, is those who are still out on the street, who are criminals, who are maybe have deportation orders, who have ignored them, those people are going to escape. They're going to escape justice. They're going to still be out on the street. And I think that that's a problem, but the Democrats are going to consider it a win, and I think that's a problem as well. You know, President Trump likes to walk away with a win, but he knows the optics of this. The Democrats have managed to own, they've managed to twist, and which they do all the time, and they do very, very well. And Trump's a big bad person because he is taking murderers and child rapists and human sex traffickers off the streets. And what's going to happen in Minneapolis and St. Paul and these cities is Americans are going to continue to die at the hands of these illegals, and the media will continue to hide it and not let you know about it. And that we can't continue like that forever. We can't. All right, coming up, we've got more with Tom Homan. He's going to talk about who he met with. He is going to talk about the safety of the community, like we were just talking about. And what he is asking of state and local officials. So we got all that coming up. I'm Mary Walter, and for Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In the past few days, I've met with Governor Waltz, Attorney General Ellison, Mayor Fry, numerous police chiefs and sheriffs, and I have more to meet. I'll also be continuing the dialogue with business and religious leaders in partnership in Minnesota, your communities. I'll be meeting with them, too, because I want to hear what they have to say.
Yeah. All right, so let's go to Mayor Jacob Fry and hear his take on his meeting with Tom Homan.
We had what I would call a productive and collegial conversation. That doesn't mean that we agreed on everything, but there was a general consensus that the present status needs to change. There was a general agreement that what has been happening for these last several weeks should not be happening into the future. Now, I made it very clear that Operation Metro Surge needs to end.
Does anybody believe that Mayor Fry made anything clear and talked tough to Tom Homan? Like, does anybody believe that? Tom Homan could just, like, backhand Fry and he would go flying across the room. I just don't believe that for a hot second. Here's my other thing. You know, let's not forget about the fraud, right? All of the fraud going on in Minnesota and the feeding our children or feeding our future, whatever. That's the first one. And there's something like 100 people who have been charged in this thing already. And the ringleader's already in jail. She's singing like a bird. And she said, oh, don't believe them. They are in it up to their eyeballs. She's talking. I hope that President Trump, if Ellison and Fry and Walls are involved in all of that fraud and they knew about it, I would hope that they get charged. They should be just like anyone else. And if they are convicted, I just hope Trump doesn't pardon them, like promise them a pardon. Now, look, like Tom Homan's not there saying, hey, you know, we know what you did. We know about the fraud. We're investigating it. We're going to find out. So you might as well cooperate. And he's not cutting some kind of deal that says you cooperate, you give us the criminals who are in your jails, Trump will, you know, will pardon you. You have President Trump's word. He'll pardon you. I hope that that's not the thing, any kind of deal that's being worked. Because I could see President Trump doing that just to get these guys out, get them off the streets in order to keep the neighborhoods safe. I think that that's a priority for him. So I would hope that that does not happen. Now, let's go to cut three. Here's also Jacob Fry on CNN, same interview. Listen to what he says about the Trump administration after what he just said. You know, I told him Operation Metro Surge needs to end and I'm a tough guy. Listen to this.
It's not about safety, nor is it, I believe, about immigration. You don't need to take my word for it. Listen to the words that are coming directly from the federal administration and people in it. This is about political retribution. And that should be concerning, by the way, not just for people that live in Minneapolis, but for everybody throughout America. We do not have a system of government where people are penalized, punished, investigated, or you have troops deployed to their city for people that disagree with the federal administration.
Yeah, that's what it's about. It's retribution. That's what it's about, Jacob. Retribution for what? Before this, no one cared about your city, like as President Trump, I think, was on his radar. But because of their immigration refusal to cooperate, their policies and refuse to cooperate and follow the law, the fraud was found out. Now, I think it probably would have come to light anyway because that guy, Dave, he's just known as Dave, had been documenting all this Somali fraud stuff with the daycares and the transportation services for years. He just happened to have somehow hooked up with Nick Shirley, and it came to light at the same time. And they were so deep into resisting that they couldn't change their tune at that last second. Let's quickly go to Alan in Virginia here about the Chinese coming to the U.S. Alan, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Mary.
Sure.
I wanted to comment and talk talk about that Chinese baby factory that's happening here in the United States. Mm-hmm. This has been going on for a long time, mm-hmm. at an industrial scale. From what I believe I've heard or read, it was like 13 years to a tune of 100,000 Chinese children being born here and becoming American citizens. They're taken back home. They're taught to be good Chinese communist citizens, and then they come back. They can come back to America, and they can become part of our political system or anything in any place they want to work at, or when it becomes a voting block. 100,000 a year can very much sway any of our big elections or small elections also. And if I remember correctly, and again, I'm not sure, but I think the difference between Trump and Hillary's election was like 80,000 votes.
Yeah.
So this could be very, very problematic coming up to America, you know, when they come in and they start basically voting for what right. the Chinese communist government will want.
Yeah, absolutely. And they found there's an entire industry where they hire American surrogates, and you could have one Chinese citizen who has, you know, 20, 30 kids, because and none of these women know that, you know, they're part of all of this. And they also there's some of these groups that also tell these Chinese parents to how to avoid detection by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol when they come into the country. They tell the women to wear loose-fitting clothing to hide their pregnancies if it's a Chinese parent, how to come in, you know, fly to Las Vegas or Honolulu before they go to Los Angeles because the international flights are more strictly screened there. So there's a whole way of applying for the visas that they know how to scam the system. And if you weren't doing something hinky, you wouldn't have to scam the system. Alan, we got to run. Thank you so much. I appreciate you joining me. Yeah, so this is the tip of the iceberg. So, you know, it seems like what's going on in Minneapolis is so separated from this. We're talking about two different things, but actually we're all talking about the same thing. We're talking about the same thing here. Very quickly, can we go to cut 28? Just very quickly, because this is what it's about. It's about community safety.
One thing we did agree on, though, everybody I talked to agreed on, was that community safety is paramount. One thing we all agreed on was U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement is a legitimate law enforcement agency that has a duty to enforce the laws enacted by Congress and keep this community safe. Like I've said many times for the last several years, even before this administration, jurisdictions that refuse to cooperate with federal immigration authorities are sanctuaries for criminals. Sanctuary cities are sanctuaries for criminals and endangers the residents of the community.
And that's why I pray that depending on where this goes, that President Trump doesn't, you know, make a deal with Walz and Frye and Ellison in exchange for keeping the community safe. Because I really do believe that's his priority. I really, really do. We'll see how this plays out. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am Mary Walter in for Brian. Welcome your calls after our guest, 866-408-7669, or you can also reach out to me on X. Just tag me in a post if you can't make a phone call. Mary Walter Radio, no S. I appreciate it. I always have to say no S because everybody gets it wrong. Joining us now, the White House correspondent for the Fox Business Network, Edward Lawrence, is here with us. Edward, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, hey, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You can find him on X at Edward Lawrence. So he was in clearly early because he's not like Edward Lawrence 15. He's the one and only.
A little secret. I worked in Las Vegas, and Las Vegas is an early adopter to new technology. And so when X came online way back in the day, what, 2006, what I think it was, 7, something like that, they made us get handles on it. And yes, very early adopter.
Wow. Never give that up. It's like the 212 area code in New York, right? Like you never want to give up your phone. All right, so let's talk about the big, beautiful bill and 2026. This is when we kept being told you're going to see the changes from the big, beautiful bill. We're going to see prosperity. We're all going to see, like, I'm expecting big stuff, right? So what am I going to see that's going to make me so happy?
I think that tax season, that's what the White House has been pushing. When you see your taxes, you're going to notice a bigger refund in it because a lot of folks didn't change their tax withholdings last year. Yet the tax code has now changed. And that is going to show up in more money in people's wallets. This year, they're going to also start to see less being taken out as some of those changes pipe through. The other side of the coin here is the Big Beautiful Bill really helped companies also move forward, allowing the 100% depreciation on some of their equipment. Allows R&D to go forward. It frees up cash flow. We're starting to see companies use that extra cash flow, so anecdotally, to expand. And that means more jobs, more people. So it does, every economist, almost every economist, I should say, that I've talked with, believes that it is going to be a big year in 2026 for the economy.
All right, lots to talk about. So I saw a report that says Americans will see an average of $1,000 in their tax refunds this year because of the big, beautiful bill. It is the filing season, as we were talking about, $1,000 per filer. The typical payout is projected to exceed $4,000. And something like 60% of filers receive refunds. All right, so two questions. First of all, if the Democrats shut down the government, is that going to affect the processing of all of our tax returns and slow down those refunds?
The answer is it could. It depends on how far along the before the shutdown happens, how far along the IRS is. But it could absolutely affect that unless for some reason the White House can figure out how to move money to pay those IRS workers to continue to process those checks and refunds. So, yes, a Democratic shutdown could affect the timeliness in which you get your refund. Now, your refund will still be the same. But, yeah, the timeliness is there. You know, it is interesting. I have heard a number of Republicans talk about the shutdown the first time around and the shutdown the second time around, if there is one, a second time around. And they say it's politically motivated to slow down this economy because they're seeing these huge numbers out of GDP, which we can recite. I mean, what was the Bureau of Economic Analysis says GDP is 4.4% in the third quarter. That's up from 3.8% in the second quarter. So it's moving forward. And I've heard Republicans say that Democrats are trying to slow this down, and a shutdown may be one way to do it. But again, it could affect the timeliness of getting refunds.
Well, I find that very cynical to think that Democrats would do that to the American public. Here's the other thing, though. About 60% of filers receive refunds. Isn't the old adage is that you should always wind up owing the government? The goal is to owe the government money come April 15th, not have the government owe you money, because you're just getting your own money back and you gave them an interest-free loan. So why do so many people, first of all, is that adage true? And then secondly, so why do so many people do it?
I think the adage is you want to come out to zero. You don't want to owe the government any money. You also don't want to you want to get the refund. And the reason I say that is because you could take that money that you are giving to the federal government to hold on to and put it in the stock market or buy an S&P index fund, just a general fund, and that money would grow more than just sitting in the federal general treasury fund waiting to come back to you for no extra money at all. So you're giving the federal government X amount of money over the course of the year just to hold on to you for you, and then you get that money back. So you want to try and even it out. You don't want to owe the government, but you also don't want to get a big refund. So you want to be right around zero.
Yeah, we owe big time this year, but but it's okay. You know, you hear the number, you're like, oh my god. But I'd rather owe that money, you know, because then have the government be sending me that money, maybe having it delayed, whereas that money could have been making money for me. So I just find it so fascinating.
You make better decisions than the federal government with your money. That is probably one thing I think a lot of people would agree about.
My husband would sometimes disagree with you on that. Can we a little bit about the salt taxes, which are state and local taxes? So when people in some states, mostly blue states, New York, New Jersey, come to mind, Illinois, California, states that have high state taxes, like New Jersey with the property taxes, which are insane, you get to deduct a certain amount from your federal taxes. So you would owe less to the feds because you get a credit for what you paid to your state. And that had been capped, I think, at
$10,000. $10,000, yes.
Now they have raised that. How much did they raise it to?
They went to $40,000 for tax years between 2025 and 2029. So that means that the mortgage that you pay up to $40,000 can be taken off your federal taxes, and again, more money in your pockets. This is a nod to some of those blue states because, you know, if you have a $500,000 home in, let's say, North Carolina or South Carolina, that home in New Jersey, that same home is probably going to be more than $1 million, just because of the higher taxes, just because of the higher cost of living. A lot of the policies that are in place in New York and New Jersey and the Northeast. So I'm not just picking on those states, but there's other blue states. California is one of them. So this salt tax does help out some of those blue states. But again, it also helps people. I mean, you know, if you've got $40,000 worth of interest payments on your mortgage, then you can deduct that and you get more money back in your pocket.
And listen, I do live in the People's Socialist Republic of New Jersey. So yippee, this is great. Great news for me. But I think it's wildly unfair. Because why should someone that lives in a red state that is responsible and has lower property taxes or no property taxes at all, why should they supplement mine in a communist hellhole?
So that has been an argument that's been on Capitol Hill between Democrats and Republicans. You know, should you reward, from the Republican side, should you reward states that maybe don't manage their finances as well as other states, or have more taxes, or spend more money of those taxpayer dollars? That debate is ongoing, and you know, whether it's right or wrong, this is where we are in the state of play, and in the Big Beautiful Bill, they had to make this compromise in order to get that through across the finish line.
All right. There's also you get to there's a new overtime deduction. So if you work overtime, if you work more than 40 hours a week and you're an hourly employee, you don't pay taxes on that extra money you made. Is that what it is?
Yes and no. I mean, there's a cap, obviously, because they couldn't give away free money. This is not Mondami's New York. But they up to $12,500, you can deduct that if you get time and a half. You get overtime there. So, yeah, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security, and there are limits to each one of those. But that is, again, more money that people are going to see in their wallets. And the idea is, from the White House, is you take that extra money and you're going to spend it, or even save it, but you're going to spend it on things that you absolutely need. So the goal and the focus in the first part of this year is basically letting folks know that life is going to be more affordable because you're going to have more money in your pocket to buy the things that you want to buy.
I also want to go to, very quickly, this is Donald Trump. This is Cut 17. Donald Trump talking about a provision in the Big Beautiful Bill that is named after him, shockingly.
Every president in modern history has left our children with nothing but debt. But under this administration, we're going to leave every child with real assets and a shot at financial freedom. We'll ensure that Americans don't just end their lives with a nest egg, but instead all Americans will begin their lives with a beautiful nest egg. There's never been anything quite like this.
I love this idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. But what do we say to the generation coming up that there's not going to be enough Social Security for, because we allowed politicians on both sides to use it as their own personal slush fund for, you know, to buy votes for whichever group. And we extended it far past the use of what it was intended for. And so we have a deficit, and we know that that bill is coming, that train's on the tracks. So what do we tell that generation that's coming up that's going to be funding the Trump accounts for the generation behind them? But when they get up there to Social Security age, we're going to go, you know what? You were responsible. You saved for your retirement. So I'm really super sorry, but we gave your money to somebody else.
You know, and it also comes down to families having kids. If you have more people that are coming up, that means more money would be able to pay into Social Security. At the moment, we have fewer births. We have fewer people coming up to pay into that. And that's part of the problem with the Social Security. But, you know, these Trump accounts do a number of different things. One, on the educational front, it from birth gets kids involved in the stock market. It's an index fund that it will be invested in. And if they do, if someone is born this year, they do absolutely nothing. By the time they're 18 years old, they'll have about $6,000. If they're put in the maximum, which is $5,000 a year, if the family puts in up to $5,000, at 18 years old, they'll have $304,000, which could be a down payment on a home. So it's an educational value for the kids to educate them on the stock market, on capitalism, on how this works, get them invested in this economy. And then it also gives them, you know, at 18 years old, a little bit of breathing room when they're going out to buy a house, or if they're going to get a car or afford their lifestyle. So it does a number of things on this. It's actually a really good idea. Plus, it also incentivizes maybe families who, yeah, I'm going to have one child, but maybe I'll have two, because we can have this account as sort of a backstop for them when they get to be 18 years old.
So what do we tell those people who are going to be funding this for the people behind them, but are going to be told, we don't have enough money to give you your share of Social Security that you paid into, so they get to pay twice?
Yeah, and again, this is going to help supplement that Social Security. You know, something has to be done, and you know the entitlements programs are part of the problem. Yeah. With the budget currently. And something is going to have to be done. We're not at that point yet, but we're getting very close to that point. I think I think it's about six, seven years away, something like that.
Yeah.
To get to that point, but the Congress is going to have to deal with it. The president's going to have to deal with it. It might not be soon. We know that Republicans want to take this on, and they want to fix this system before it's damaged beyond repair. But this account will help those folks know that there is an alternative if Social Security isn't there for them.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly. And I also see the train on the tracks already, that when, you know, poor people can't put money into their kids' account, it's not fair that the rich kids wind up with, you know, $1 million by the time they're 21, and the poor kids don't have any more money in their account. They only have the $1,000 that was in there to begin with, and that's going to be a thing, and this is going to expand. But that's just me. I'm cynical, and I've seen the way entitlement programs have gone in the past, so I'm pretty much sure how this is going to end. Very quickly, we don't have time to play the audio, but Zora Mamdani says, we have a deficit, and it's everybody's fault but mine, right? It's everybody else's fault. He had no idea that there was this huge deficit. So instead of trying to cut and things like that, he's giving, you know, free child care and the free buses and the this and the that, and he's blaming everyone else. And now he wants to raise income taxes on the top 1% by 2%.
Yeah.
Is this just the beginning?
It's really interesting. I did see a clip in 2023. Then Mayor Adams said that if we pay for all of this free stuff for immigrants coming into the city, we'll have a $12 million budget deficit. Here we are years later, and Madami's saying, oh my gosh, the last mayor left me a $12 million deficit. So it's really funny that this is out there. But yeah, no, what's happening is people will leave. The wealth creators in New York City will leave, and we're already starting to see that. They will go to Florida, they will go to Texas, where there's no state income tax, where it's more favorable to businesses. So, you know, this is going to be an ongoing theme for New York City, and we'll have to see how it survives.
Yeah, and he obviously, he's also blaming Kathy Hochul because she is not interested in bringing it in front of the state assembly to raise taxes, right?
So she's not,
right, exactly. So she's not interested. Give it a year, Mom Donnie, and I'll do it next year if I get reelected. That's going to happen. And of course, he's going to blame Trump. He does what communists do. It's never their fault. It's everybody else's fault. And they're just here to help you fix the problem by making someone else pay for it. So it is kind of fun to watch. But unfortunately, they're all moving to New Jersey as they flee. They move to New Jersey and then vote for the same stuff. They move to the Carolinas, Pennsylvania. Yeah. We see it all over the country. And then they move for the same stuff and then are shocked when they have to move yet again.
Yeah.
it's a lot.
No, free stuff is great until you have to pay the bill.
Did Margaret Thatcher say that? Socialism's great until you run out of other people's money?
Yes, exactly.
Edward Lawrence, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. I feel so much better about what I'm going to see in 2026. I'm hoping, fingers crossed. Not looking forward to that big $1,000 extra in my tax refund, so that was my fault. But looking to see where this goes.
All right. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. We still got a day or so, but have a great weekend. All right. Your call's coming up. 866-408-7669. I also have that Mandani audio so you could hear it because he tells a little story. So we'll have that coming up for you on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
From breaking news to big name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. That makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Coming up, I will take your calls. We're going to talk about what we were just discussing with Edward Lawrence, White House correspondent for the Fox Business Network. And we're going to talk about Social Security. We're going to talk about the Trump accounts for the kids because they do see problems with it. Is it fair that people in responsible states have to pay for the property taxes and the deductions for people in irresponsible states? I live in an irresponsible state and I don't think it's fair. I just don't. Also, what's happening with Mom Donnie? And another question I want to ask you, Axios has a really interesting piece about where the poverty is in this country. Why are so many of our elderly citizens, I hate to say elderly because I'm getting there, but our older citizens entering retirement and entering their senior years with very little money? You know, what happened there? Like, I thought that was the American dream. You save, you live below your means when you're younger, and you save and you put the money away as much as you can, and you educate yourself to make yourself better. That's the American dream. And I think too many people think Social Security is meant to live on, and it's not. So we're going to talk about that. I thought that that was super interesting as well. So that is all coming up, 866-408-7669. Don't forget, if you can't get to the phone, you can tag me in a post on X, Mary Walter Radio, no S, and I will try to multitask and get to your comments as well as the calls next on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The city is in a difficult position. We are also seeing a moment where the gross fiscal mismanagement has left New Yorkers with a bill the likes of which we have not seen in many, many years. And we have seen in the politics of the past that in moments such as these, we ask those with the least to bear the greatest burden. And we know that here in the wealthiest city in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, that we can not only put our city back on firmer financial footing, but also build a stronger city for everyone if the top 1% of New Yorkers pay an additional 2% in income taxes. Recently, I actually had a New Yorker turn to me and self-identify as someone who would be taxed by this proposal. They said, you know, I'm a millionaire, and is it true that you want to raise taxes on me? And I said, it is true. And they said, well, I would leave. I said, I don't think you would. They said, why not? I said, because we're looking to raise income taxes on the top 1% by 2%. So for $1 million a year, that's an increase of $20,000 in taxes. And when I told them the amount, they realized that it wasn't enough to actually make them change where they would consider their residence.
Tell me about that. Who was this person? I'll take things that didn't happen for 200, Alex. I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. Yeah, I'm not buying that. See, here's the thing. That was Zoran Mamdani, obviously. And they've got this big budget deficit. And they spent a boatload of cash on housing illegals and giving them three meals a day that they threw out because it wasn't culturally sensitive food. And giving them those cards, getting sometimes up to $5,000 a month on those prepaid debit cards that the city was, you know, putting all that money out to welcome our neighbors and destroy hotels. And let them just run wild through New York City for 4 years almost. And now they have a deficit for the actual taxpayers and American citizens. Here's the thing. I think a lot of people can afford, like we can afford to stay in New Jersey, my husband and I. We can afford it. We can continue to afford to pay these insane, ridiculous property taxes. But when we look at it, we're like, well, why would we want to? We can move and go somewhere else, and we can pay a 20th of what we're paying in New Jersey for our property taxes. That's that much more money back in my pocket for when I retire. So why would I want to pay, continue to give the New Jersey government this cash and to do God knows what with? So maybe this person did say, maybe this person really exists. I doubt it. And they really said, oh yeah, that's not that much. I'm going to stay because they love living in New York that much. Listen, my husband loves, we love living in New Jersey. I'm going to have to pry his fingers loose from the door jam to get him out of the house. But we can live so much more comfortably elsewhere and keep more of our money. I deeply resent having to give my money to the government in order to stay in my home. Why? So, anyway. All right, let's get to your calls. 866-408-7669. Or you can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. Thank you, Hank, who says, we need you more. I'm like, thank you. And don't forget, my podcast is Tuesday evenings, 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a live cast, actually, on Rumble, YouTube, and Getter. And we have all sorts of guests from politicians to movie producers. It's always a mishmash, true crime podcast hosts. And you can get the audio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Spreaker as well. All right, joining us, Ellen in Manhattan. Ellen, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, Mary. Great show. Love listening to you. Makes me so happy.
Thank you so much. In the interest of full disclosure, when I was on the old strategy room at Fox, which was the precursor to The Five, Ellen was also on that as well. She's a financial guru. And now she is actually a full-time comedian, Ellen Karras, and you can see her all over New York, New Jersey, the tri-state area. She's everywhere. So check her out. So there you go. All right, Ellen, you live in Manhattan.
Thank you for the plug. Okay,
of course.
So much to say about Mamdani. I wish he would just go and be a full-time DJ and just give up this mayor dream. But anyway, we're stuck with him. This guy is so economically illiterate. It's mind-boggling. My finance brain is on fire. I wish he even just to take a basic bookkeeping course so he can just understand how numbers actually work. First of all, to sit here and say that New York City is going to be in a recession, the stock market is booming. Retail has come back. Places like Hudson Yards, the Financial District, Williamsburg, I mean, you can't touch these places. They are just expanding. Companies are coming in here, tech, legal, etc. Restaurants. I live on the Upper East Side. Multi-million dollar buildings, residential buildings are being built all over the place. Ask anybody that tries to rent an apartment here how much the rent is. So for him to say that we're going to go into a recession is ridiculous. During the Christmas season, it was so busy, which was great. It's all really good. This has always been his mantra. It's the mantra of the left, right? Tax the rich. I am so tired of this whole thing with 1%. As we know, the top 1% pays pays at least 40% of all federal income taxes. Go to 10%. That's they pay 90%. It's always about this trying to get everything out of everybody. People that make a lot of money pay a lot of taxes. They don't get away with it. So it's just a lie, and it just frustrates me. He wants more money so he can put in his socialist/communist policies. So I hope it snows until May so he can not focus on the economy. I mean, this guy is so dangerous. You know, he's so dangerous, and he just doesn't know. And he doesn't know. And plus, this is the agenda. This is what they want to do. This is why they keep saying it over and over again: tax the rich don't pay their fair share. Because if you say something enough times, it becomes the truth. So, but people believe that it becomes the truth. And
right.
I just want to say one other thing about Trump. You asked about, why should high-tax states, why should low-tax states be penalized for high-tax states? I'll say this about Trump, but it didn't work out for him. In his first term, he put in the cap for state and local income taxes, right? That's what SALT stands for. And his thought process was that if he puts the cap on this tax, then the governments in those states, New York, New Jersey, etc., would be forced to lower the tax. So he was going to try to force them to lower taxes. As we know, that did not happen, and wound up that people in high tax states got very, very hurt. And it was a bit unfair because people that bought homes, they bought it a long time ago. You factor in that you're going to deduct the interest. You know, it was a little out of, taking the legs off the table. But we got up to a $40,000 cap. Thank you, Mike Lawler and his crew that fought for that for the next couple of years. You know, we'll see what happens. But and I'm like your husband. I don't want to go anyplace. I don't want, no offense to the Carolinas. I can't live there. I go out of my mind. They throw me out for being rude.
Right. Yeah, and Ellen, I don't mean to cut you off because I know she does an hour set, so she could keep going. But you're right. You made a lot of really good points here. But I do think, the states did not lower their taxes. Instead, they raised them to bring more money in, and that's what they do. And so this whole lowering of the SALT tax, the SALT cap, even though I live here, I just don't think it's fair. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us here. Let's quickly go to William on WTRC in South Bend, Indiana. William, welcome.
Thank you, Mary. How are you?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
I've talked to you a couple of times before, and Brian's absent. So, a couple of things I want to talk about. Number one, Social Security. We don't have a choice. You work, you get a paycheck. Social Security is automatically deducted out of your pay. I don't understand what everybody is that since Social Security came into play, that again, it's not to live on. It's to supposedly it's to help you continue your life after you stop working. So, but we have no choice in paying this, but yet they do with it what they will. They'll pay for the homeless. They'll pay for the illegal immigrant. They do everything they want to with it, and it was supposed to be the holy grail. Nobody was to touch it. It was supposed to be for this and this only. So,
but let me just say, though, it was never, it was a supplement. It is literally, it's a supplemental income. It's Social Security supplemental income. It was never meant to live off of. It was never meant to pay your rent and your food and your health, all that stuff. It was never meant for that. It's just a supplement. And I think too many people now really say, I'm just going to live on Social Security.
Doesn't happen. I don't think there's any state in this country that you can live on Social Security alone.
Right. You're not supposed to, but I think a lot of people do think they are going to, and that's the problem.
No, and I think the bigger problem is the fact is that they take this money and they use it for what they want. Well, you know what? Don't take the money and let us invest it in what we want. And then we have nobody to point the finger to but ourselves.
No, I agree with that 100%. William, thank you. We got to run, but thank you so much for that. I would love that. I don't understand why I have to give the federal government money because there's some people who are irresponsible. But this is what happens, and this is why I look at the Trump accounts, and there are people who aren't going to put money into their kids' account. Maybe they can't. Not everybody can. And when these kids start turning 18 and some kids have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in their Trump account and other kids only have the $1,000 they started out with, they're going to say it's unfair, it's racist, whatever. And then we're going to wind up having to keep putting money in those Trump accounts. You watch. That's what's going to happen. All right, more coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show, 866-408-7669. We're talking about the big, beautiful bill, the effect on the economy coming up, talking also about the number of older Americans who are counting on Social Security. They're coming into their retirement in their older years, thinking that they're just going to live on Social Security, and it's not working out for them. They are increasingly house rich, but income poor. So they have the house. But then to sell the house and go rent, rents are super high, so they're kind of stuck in that area. And why is that? Also, Vizora Mondami in New York, talking about him as well. A junior in North Carolina, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Well, greetings from the city of Raleigh, North Carolina, where 81 people daily are relocating, and they're all from New Jersey and New York. This is now the nickname of the city is the city of yellow license plates, because people from up north bring their bad politics and their rude behavior with them, and it's our own fault. We've offered them southern hospitality. They're taking us up on it, and here they come.
Yep. I'll tell you, it's one of the reasons when we retire, I'm not moving to the Carolinas, because you're going to be purple, and the same thing's going to happen to you that happened to New Jersey when the New Yorkers moved here. The same thing's going to happen, and I'm sorry.
Sadly, I think you're on to something. God bless you. Come see us. We'd love
All right. Thanks so much. See, I could move there. They would like me because I'm not bringing the crappy policies. I'm actually fleeing New Jersey for the right reasons. It happens all over the country. You're seeing it everywhere. They're like locusts. They destroy an area with high taxes and giveaways and this and that and everything else that feels good. And then when they have to pay for it, they pick up and move somewhere else that has red policies and, you know, a responsible conservative government. And what do? They vote for the stuff that feels good all over again. In Georgia, Tim wants to talk about Mamdani and his lack of math, I think. Tim, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
And what do?
Hey.
Feels good all over again.
I want to talk about Mayor Mondami.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's his name.
Mamdani, right? Yeah, Mamdani.
I call him Dummy, but okay. Anyways. If he really was talking to a guy who had $1 million and he said he had to share with him what 2% was, no, I don't believe it. If the guy made $1 million, I think he can calculate what 2% of taxes are.
Yeah. I didn't even catch you right that. You're absolutely right. And this is $1 million a year because it's an income tax. So these are people who are making $1 million a year.
No, I mean, think about it. He has to go to his financial advisor to help him calculate what 2% on his $1 million he makes a year? Come on. That guy does not exist.
That's so true. Thank you for catching that. I really appreciate it, Tim. Thank you so much. Let's quickly get in a couple more here. Adam in Illinois here on the Brian Kilmeade Show about the Trump accounts. Go ahead, Adam.
Yes, back in the year 2000, I only had $2,000 in the bank. I lost my job, looked like I'm going to be doing temp work for the rest of my life. I just heard about the Roth account, where mm-hmm. you put money in and it grows tax-free. That's a 30% gain right there, just being tax-free. I bought stock with $2,000. At the end of 8 years, it was worth $6,000. It grew that much. That's when I started investing in the stock market. Now, I wrote an email to the White House about a year ago. I don't know if this is what inspired them. But the problem today is that we do not have financial education for low-income people. Right now, in my town of 40,000 people, in order to talk to a broker, you have to have $400,000 to invest. people don't have $400,000 living in a town of 40,000 people.
Right.
It's completely stupid. But they don't have the financial education. So what Trump is doing, and what I learned by my own luck, is that if you can put a small amount of money and not pay taxes on it, and if you use your mind, you can grow it. Now, not everyone is smart enough to know how to manage money, because I have family members. I try talking to them, and they don't believe a crap I say. But now that I'm 73 years old, I have $140,000 in the bank, and it started with me putting $2,000 in a Roth IRA, which was tax-free, and thank God a Republican brought up the Roth IRA and passed the bill in 1997.
Well, what a great story, Adam. But I have a quick question for you. At $2,000 in the bank, I have like 30 seconds. Did you? You said you put it in a Roth IRA. Can you buy stocks in the Roth IRA? Is that how you did it?
Yes. Whenever you do it, you go to a broker, and the broker, they have an account, and you say it's a Roth account, and that's just a type of account, like a bank account. What you do with it is up to you.
Okay. Okay. So you can use that money to invest. Super interesting. And I know you said you have family members that aren't listening, but maybe some of the younger ones, you can give them like a little seed money and teach them how to make it grow. And I think that that's a great way to help maybe pass some literacy, financial literacy on to the next, the younger generation. Maybe not your kids, but maybe their kids. Adam, thank you so much for sharing that. That's fantastic. And congratulations. You know, my dad did that. We had, and kids don't have chores anymore. So we had to earn money. Right? So we had to earn the money. My dad didn't just hand us $20. It wasn't an ATM. And we took that money and we had to invest it. We had to put it in the bank. And we got a little passbook and the whole bit. And it was great. It was fantastic. And I think that's a great way. We have to teach kids financial literacy. He's so, so right. All right. Mary Walter with you on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. 866-408-7669 is my number. I think you're going to want to join me on this one. I really do. Don't forget, you can join me on my live cast Tuesdays, 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Always different, not always political. Never know who it's going to be. Sometimes I have guests, sometimes I don't. But you can participate, ask questions, leave comments live on Rumble, YouTube, and Getter. Look for Mary Walter Radio. Audio is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Spreaker. Again, look for Mary Walter Radio. Now, during the course of this conversation, if you can't pick up the phone and give me a call, you can just tag me in a post on X at Mary Walter Radio with no S and just leave your comment there and I will try to multitask. So I want to have this conversation and the producer, Allison, we were talking about this and I think it's an interesting conversation to have. And I think everyone at some point in their life comes across a situation where they're like, I wonder if this is something that would be an option. And I'm talking about medically assisted suicide. Now, they call it medical aid in dying made. It's really big in Canada. So European countries, but Canada seems to be like the forerunners. They're all about the maid. It's not euthanasia because it requires terminally ill patients to self-administer the medication. Euthanasia involves a healthcare provider directly administering a fatal dose. Active euthanasia is illegal in all 50 states. Montana is the only state where medical aid in dying is legal through court ruling rather than legislation. More than a fifth of the U.S. population currently lives in a jurisdiction where this is authorized. I didn't even realize that. Now, the reason I say that this is a conversation I think everyone at some point in time or the thought passes through your brain, we all know someone who has some incurable illness, right? I think everybody does. I know quite a few people. My husband works with an ALS organization, and you see it's a death sentence. And your brain is fine. It's just that your body slowly stops working. They don't know why, and it affects everyone differently, and you don't know how it's going to affect you. And you just see as I get to, you know, I've gotten to know these patients over the years, knowing what's in front of them, and they have no control. And they have questions. Well, do I go on a feeding tube? Well, do I go on a breathing machine? And these are all questions that they have and they have to make as the patient. And it's really hard. And sometimes you think, you know, would they make the decision if they had it to stop their suffering? It's terminal. It's a terminally ill disease. But they may not be terminal at the time. You know, the disease has to progress, and for some people, they lose the ability to walk. Other people lose the ability to speak, and I've said to my husband on more than one occasion, you know, we wouldn't make our pets suffer like this, but we make grandma suffer. And so I have very, very mixed reactions on this. What bothers me, though, is I look at Canada, which this is very prolific in Canada, this maid that they have there. And they only have to show that they have a condition that is intolerable. So it went from a terminal illness in Canada to now, well, you know, there's people who have, it's in terminal, the pain, it's the pain is intolerable, rather, but that their condition is intolerable and they can't be relieved under conditions that they consider acceptable. And there's a story about a mother, and her son is blind. He has type 1 diabetes, had some complications, and he lives in public housing, and he has depression because I guess they have all those things, you have depression. But long story short, he wound up using this system, this maid system, to end his life because he felt his condition was intolerable. Now, many people live with blindness or type 1 diabetes and or depression. They get medication for it. But if you personally feel that it's intolerable, you can do this. So the number of people doing this is skyrocketing in Canada. The fastest growing category in Canada statistics is not cancer, heart disease, or any specific illness. So for MAID, it's not because of cancer. It's not heart disease people. It's another group of people who choose this called other. MAID deaths in the other category almost doubled in 2023 from a year earlier. They're up to over 4,200 and adding up to 28% of all assisted suicide deaths now is in the other category. In 2015, Canada's Supreme Court ruled that assisted suicide is constitutional, and the country now has one of the highest rates of medically assisted death in the world. 5.1%, a total of almost 16,500 deaths in 2024. I don't know what the numbers are for 2025. In Oregon, again, it accounts for 0.9% of deaths. So it's used much more restricted here in the United States. So we'll go into this a little bit more, but I want to get your thoughts on this. I don't want it to be like morbid or morose, but I think it's a conversation, since if you go to deathwithdignity.org, it's a very liberal site, right? So automatically I'm against it. I'm like, this is no good. It is growing. In this country, and let me give out the phone number before I go into this, 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. And I think it's easy for those of us sitting here with no, you know, we're fine, we don't have anything to worry about. You don't know what's going to be down the road, and could you possibly be in a situation where you have a disease that has no cure, or cancer or something along those lines, and you are terminal. That's what the requirements are in this country at this point. You could say, you know what, I just want to stop the suffering. I just want to stop. And I tell my husband, I'm like, if that ever happens to me, put the pillow over my head, right? Because I don't want to live that. I want quality of life, not quantity of life. I want quality. And if the next 6 months of my life are going to be sitting in a bed with, you know, diapers or a bedpan or drooling, and I have no quality of life, I don't think that that's what I would want. However, being Catholic, that kicks in too. So everybody's situation is different. So where it is legal in the United States, California, Colorado, Delaware, DC, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. States that are considering it this year, Arizona, Indiana, Kentucky, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, New Hampshire, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Tennessee, and Virginia. Now, they call it a state under threat. States actively under threat. D.C., death with dignity in D.C. is under threat. Congressional opponents are trying to repeal D.C.'s death with dignity law by including a rider in the House Appropriations Committee budget bill. So they're very upset about that. And in Illinois, there is a bill there that would repeal it, HB 4381. So they've got their people on that. There's an amendment pending in New Jersey that would waive the 15-day waiting period for patients who are not expected to survive the 15 days. So if you're not expected to survive the 15 days and you just want to call it, in New Jersey, they'll let you do that. But I see room for shenanigans with that. Washington State, something's going on there. So it doesn't say exactly what's happening in Washington D.C. It's currently legal, and they say there's an amendment pending, but they did not. Didn't expound on the amendment that's pending. So I think it's a conversation that a lot of families have, right? You know, because you have your living wills. You could say, I don't want to be kept artificially alive. Like, I don't want extraordinary measures. You can have do not resuscitate orders. And I'd rather make those decisions while I am still compos mentis. You know, I still got everything upstairs. And I can make that decision with a clear head. So it's coming, whether you like it or not. It's expanding across the country. It's a conversation that has to be had, even though I think a lot of people, I know seniors who don't even want to make a will. They don't want to even have that conversation, let alone anything else. 866-408-7669. Or as I said, you can go on X, tag me in a post, Mary Walter Radio. Bonnie in Washington, you're going to kick it off here. Bonnie, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hello.
Hi, Mary. I was just listening to you, and when you were mentioning about Canada,
yes,
it just made me think about their universal health care and how long it takes them to get in to see a doctor, especially if they have a terminal illness. So I can totally see why, you know, they have more people that just want to go ahead and just end it because they know that they're just not going to get the treatment that they should be getting.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. There is a woman, her name is Jolene Van Alstine. She's 45 years old and she lives in Saskatchewan, and she has been suffering for 8 years with an endocrine disease that causes nausea, vomiting, and bone pain. She had 3 surgeries. She needs another one to save her life, and she couldn't get it in Canada because of where she lives. There's no surgeon in that area. And to get to an endocrinologist who could do it in another area of Canada, the wait's too long. So now there's a movement to bring her to the U.S. and have her get treatment here, because you know what they approved her for? They said, "Well, you can go do MAID," because she couldn't get the surgery in Canada. So, you know, that's the alternative because their health system's so fantastic, you know? I can't get it.
Yeah, especially for a terminal illness, you know, you got to get in right away, you know? And that's why a lot of them flee to the United States, you know, to get their health care needs.
Yep. Exactly. Bonnie, thank you for kicking it off. I do appreciate it. I'm glad you brought up Canada because, as I said, this woman has been in the news, and especially if you get into it with anyone, any Canadian on X or any other social media about their healthcare, and they're like, "Oh, Canadian healthcare is great. You Americans are so stupid." Bring this chick up, because the only alternative they gave her was, well, you could just apply to die if you want. And that's what I'm afraid of with this. I'm afraid that it gets bastardized along the way. 866-408-7669. A lot of people want to get in here. I will get to your calls. And again, you can tag me on X at Mary Walter Radio. All that's coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Real talk, real guests, real insight. Where curiosity meets conversation. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Talking about MAID, as it's called in Canada, which is medically assisted suicide. And in the U.S., they call it death with dignity or assisted suicide, whatever it is. Euthanasia, not legal. You get the medication, you administer it yourself. You as a patient, different states have different requirements of how it's handled. We don't have a nationwide policy on it. But I've seen how it has progressed in Canada, and I don't like it that it went from having a terminal illness to a condition that is quote-unquote intolerable, and the patient just decides, this is intolerable, I can't live like this anymore, and that's that. And, I get it, but I also don't get I fear it at the same time, if that makes sense. So I'd like to get your input. 866-408-7669 on X Mary Walter Radio if you want to make a comment there and tag me in it. Renee in New York, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Mary. Hi.
Hi. Go ahead. Oh.
just talking with the girl that answered when I called and explaining my situation, I just like fell to tears because what choices do we have? You know, we don't have many choices in life that are our own. We have the law to live up to. We have so many rules and regulations. You know, you're born without your permission, and then when you die, you know, there's all these loopholes and whatever. And I'm a nurse, 30 years, but now I'm on the other end of that, and I'm deathly sick every single day of my life. Doctor after doctor after doctor, emergency room, one after the other, collapsing sometimes there. And they run a bunch of tests and they see things. They're all little things. But all put together, I'm deathly ill and no one can fix any of them. I'm chronically dizzy. I'm so sick just opening my eyes that I stay in bed with sunglasses on. My life is
basically you have
over.
Let me ask you a question. You have no diagnosis of what is wrong with you. It's an unknown.
Yeah. I have an armful. Yeah, an arm length full. I have brain aneurysms, but they're stable. I have left bundle branch block of my heart, but it's stable. I have these SVTs I have to take medicine for. There's constant heart palpitations and heart stopping. Mm-hmm. I have now, because I think the body can only take so much, now I have these stomach issues that are send me to the hospital. I don't have any pain. I just want to pass out. And a cardiologist said, I think it's your stomach. So I went to a stomach doctor.
Right. Yeah.
I'm at one now in the parking lot.
Yeah. So you're saying
together,
that for you, what you're saying is, not to interrupt you, but a lot of people want to get on here. I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. For you, this is something that you would consider because you're like, I'm done.
Absolutely.
I can't do this anymore. I can't hit. See, I hear stories like this. I hear stories like this. And I would say, okay, who am I to impose my beliefs on you, right? I don't live in your body. I don't live with that pain. I don't live with those conditions. So who am I to do that? And I would say, listen, in my brain, I say, okay, if that's good for you, the only thing I fear is that we go.
I have a fear of it.
Right? Yeah. No, I fear that we go from loosening it up so much, like in little tiny increments, that people are having a bad day and they go to their doctor and they're like, oh, I'm miserable. Life is horrible. I'm so depressed all the time. I can't live anymore. Sure, here you go.
Or like this woman in Canada, where they say, you know what?
You're costing too much on socialized medicine, because that's where we're headed anyway. You're costing the government too much. So we're not going to give you any more. So here you go. This is your cheapest alternative. End it. That's what I fear.
Well, I agree with you 1,000%. And I think about kids that commit suicide at a very young age. They don't realize their whole life's ahead of them because somebody wrote something bad on their Instagram. Doesn't mean their life's over. They don't know yet. So it should not be put in the hands of people like that. And anybody that is, just like you said, having a bad day or something, you know, it can't be. Now, one man's trash is another man's treasure. So like you said, we don't know what someone else is going through. But I think there should absolutely be guidance and guidelines
And if you've exhausted everything that you can possibly do, and I have, every clinic around the country, you don't even want to know in 2.5 years alone what I've been through. There's nowhere left for me to go. There's nothing. So and for a responsible human being that doesn't want to lose their life, but can't put up with the constant sickness, dizziness, whatever.
Yeah,
do it.
Yeah, and Renee, I don't mean to cut you off, but we got to go. We're out of time. But I really feel for you, and I will pray for you. And I just hope that there is some, you find some doctor that can help you, because I heard it in her voice. And I have a friend like this who also has one unknown illness after the next, and you can see the changes physically in her, and it's horrific. It really is bad. More of your calls coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Continuing our conversation here about assisted suicide in the United States. It gets a couple calls, and then there's other news that we also will hopefully have some time to get to as well. There's so much happening. But this is an important conversation, in my humble opinion, because it is spreading across the United States, and each state has different rules, and currently legal in California, Colorado, Delaware, District of Columbia, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington, and other states that are considering bills this year to make assisted suicide legal in their states: Arizona, Indiana, Kentucky, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, New Hampshire, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Tennessee, and Virginia. So slowly spreading, and it is not something that a healthcare provider directly administers to you. The patient has to be able to do that. So that's part of this whole calculus that comes in to play here. And you heard that last caller. I mean, it's heart-wrenching. It's gut-wrenching when you hear that. And she's a nurse, and so she sees people in hospice and says, I don't want to go like that. I mean, how many times have you seen a loved one who's really suffering, and you're like, oof, you know, we wouldn't do this to the dog. Why do we do this to grandma? But the other part of me, the other side of me says, I fear that it will usher in a society where if you're just having a bad run of it. Listen, our 2025, I had a couple of highlights. I really did. I had some really great big highlights. But man, the hits kept coming. 2025 in general, not a great year. But because I'm having a bad year and I've got like a 6-month run of bad things or something like that, and so now I'm depressed, should I be able to just say, I'm done, I can't do this anymore, like, because you're depressed? That's where I think the funkiness of this comes in for me. And it's a discussion that we have to have, I think, as a country. 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669, or you can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio, tag me in a post. Charles did that, and he's listening in Jacksonville, Florida. He said, I'm willing to bet doctors push a lot harder on those patients to make a decision, right? Also, I wonder how it would move gun statistics. I don't know if it would move gun. Oh, meaning because right now, do you know the bulk of us deaths by handguns are suicides in this country? The bulk of the handgun deaths, suicides. And yeah, I don't know what it would do. And also, are you going to have to pay for it? Do you have to pay for the medication? There's a lot of questions. And I assume that we probably pay for the medication. So let's have that conversation. Let's get into it a little bit more. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona, and speak with Catherine. Catherine, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Yes, my heart goes out to Renee. But we have solutions for her. There are solutions across the United States and in Canada. There are medical schools of holistic medicine that specialize in pain, chronic disease, emotional pain. And these are things that Western medicine is just starting to see as integrative medicine, but they're not referring and they're not given that option. Yet the Joint Commission, which accredits hospitals, now mandates that they require the hospitals to require the hospitals to offer acupuncture instead of opioids because it's so effective. So I just want to say that there is hope out there for people, and when the options are there, it gives them a chance at life. We have people at our clinic. We run an acupuncture college here, and I'm the president of the school, so biased, but I am a recovering attorney who found this medicine to be so effective that we got the law passed here in Arizona.
Interesting. Now, did you reach out to me on X?
No.
No, okay, because listen to this. Breezy Jr. tagged me in a post on X and said, listening to the caller today saying she had nothing left broke my heart. I wish I could have reached her and asked if she had tried an herbalist. It just seems doctors don't treat the disease, they just treat the symptoms. So it really dovetails with exactly what you're saying, that there are other alternatives out there as well. And so let me ask you, so the alternative medicines, do they treat just the symptoms?
Well, we see things differently. It's based on physics, quite frankly. Physics, and then actually homeopathy is quantum physics. Or they're both quantum physics, but the nanoparticle medicine. That's homeopathy.
I was just curious if it's a symptoms versus disease type thing. Super interesting. Catherine, thank you so much. I hope Renee is still listening. I really do. She does work in the medical industry, so I would assume she's probably branched out into looking into other things, but you'd be surprised how many people don't. Like I said, I have a dear friend, and I'm always pushing her to look for other things, you know, to go other places. But a lot of times insurance doesn't cover it, and when you don't have a lot, It's hard to sometimes make that leap when you can just keep seeing the doctors that are covered by your insurance plans. David in Jacksonville, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hey, Mary. Thanks for taking my call. First-time caller. I really appreciate you having me. I just wanted to say, as a person living in Jacksonville, Florida, who's a spiritual person, a believer in God, it's amazing that we believe God has given us free will, but yet We choose sometimes to kind of not look at the fact that if God doesn't actively come down from heaven, which the last time I checked, he doesn't do that on a regular basis and stop a person from doing what they're doing, why is it that other human beings feel compelled to take it upon themselves to try to dictate what a human being is choosing to do with their selves and with their life? That seems boggling to me. And I understand you have fears, but that seems kind of weird, you know, because sad to say, sometimes we're looking at it from a vantage point of the one not suffering, the one not being the caretaker. So why is it that we're trying to do what God doesn't even do?
And I understand that, totally understand that. But I just look at Canada. Canada started out with all good intentions. But because of their socialized medicine system, which we're going to have here, because of that, she can't get a doctor in her area. So you're geographically tied to the area, just like in England. You have an assigned hospital that you have to go to. You have assigned doctors because they're in your geographic area. So if you don't live in a city, you have fewer choices. So she's in Saskatchewan, and she can't get the treatment she needs because they don't offer, none of the doctors offered in Saskatchewan. So she can try to get a doc appointment with a doctor outside of her area, but the waiting list is too long because they're specialists and they take care of the people in their area first. So they go, well, here, you can do MAID. You could die. That's what I fear. When someone's trying to help themselves.
You have valid fears, but I'm just simply looking at it from the basics.
I get it.
You're a believer in God. We live in a country that hopefully still is predominantly Christian, but a lot of times people forget. Generally speaking, God doesn't come down from heaven and say, get off the railroad tracks. He doesn't send an angel, generally speaking, to push you off the railroad tracks.
100%.
When God gives something, he completely gives it, and he doesn't take it back. So what I'm saying in that regard is that if we truly respect that every last single adult human being has been given free will. Even children have it, but they haven't been given stewardship over it right. Until they become an adult. But once you become an adult and you've given stewardship,
yeah.
If you're to the point where you have decided, mm-hmm. regardless of what your reasons are, whether it's because you're having a bad year, bad day, because you're terminally ill, whatever the case may be, if you're exercising your free will and you're choosing that as an option, why is it that another human being feel compelled to stand in the way of that?
It's an opinion that I think a lot of people hold. David, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining me, and thanks for calling in. We really appreciate that. I understand that. But I do think the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We've seen it with so many things, right? We've seen so many great programs in this country where, we're just going to give people a safety net to get by. That's all. It's not going to be abused. We're just going to give them a safety net to get by. Well, I know they're on it for a generation and a half, but now we have to give them food too. So we're going to give them food because they're not using the money that we give them. And it snowballs. And we've seen it happen in Canada. So I have pause and I'm like, how can we do it differently here if to avoid what is happening in Canada? I'm sorry, but I think just because you're having a bad day, isn't the reason to run off. And I understand it's not there yet. They have to go through a process. But just because you're depressed. And I understand David's point as well. It's very hard. All right, more of your calls. We'll wrap this up coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade talking about assisted suicide spreading across the country. More and more states taking it on. More and more states approving it. Some put it up to a vote. Some of it is passed legislatively. And sometimes it goes to court. And that's how it is passed. But after seeing what's happening in Canada and the expansion of it, how do you feel about it? 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. Can't get to the phone, tag me on a post on X at Mary Walter Radio. Matt in Oklahoma, you're a hospice nurse. I'm glad you called. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thank you. Yes, I've been doing hospice. I'm an RN. I've been doing hospice for 20 years now. I really don't truly know exactly how I feel about this topic. I think it would have to be very highly regulated, but in my experience in seeing hundreds of deaths over my career, it's extremely, extremely rare for us not to be able to get somebody comfortable at end of life. I think what most people struggle with terminal illness is, the loss of function, the loss of the way their life used to be, the anxiety, the emotional and mental issues that come along with dealing with terminal illness. And that's why with hospice, we have a team approach that includes social workers and chaplains and volunteers and other support staff that help people through those portions of end of life. So I can think of maybe one case in my entire career that we really, truly struggled to get somebody comfortable because they had an extremely rare type of cancer with severe pain. It required unbelievable amounts of medication and intervention to get them comfortable, but we were able to get it done and get her comfortable before she passed. So I think a lot of what people deal with is not the physical as much as it is the mental and emotional, in my mm-hmm. experience.
Yeah, and you would know, and God bless you for what you do. That has to be, it must take a toll on you mentally as well, seeing this over and over and over again. So kudos to you. I give you a lot of credit for what you do. God bless you. Thank you, Matt. Yeah, I'm a fan of that. Like, I'm okay with just pump me up with the morphine. Like, just give me the good stuff. That's fine, right? And that one caller, I get what he was saying, but here's the other part of it that says, God's going to take you on his time. Well, if you believe that, then you wouldn't do intervention to make your life longer, right? Because if God gives you cancer, well, then that's how God wants you to die, right? So you wouldn't go do chemo or do this or do that. So this is a very, very deep thing, and I think it's a very individual thing as well. And maybe we should just leave it up to the individual. Laura in New York. Laura, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hello, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you.
I'm calling because I was very, very touched to hear about the boy who had type 1 diabetes, had complications, and decided to do the medical suicide. I am 60 years old now, but I have been a diabetic type 1 since I was 7 years old. I have complications from it, but I'm still going. I'm still working. I'm still pushing through life. I have lots of pains because I also have other problems like rheumatoid arthritis. I have joint pain in every part of my body. I have tendon tears, etc. Whatever the case may be. When I was younger, there were times, of course, life is tough for everybody at certain times in their life, but when I was in my teens, there was heartbreak, and then there was a divorce, and then there was my mother's death and my father's death, etc. Life could become very, very depressing and very, very sad. And if I didn't have my noggin on straight, and they had that option out there, I may have said, you know what, I can't take this anymore. Take my life away. And I am so glad that that opportunity wasn't there, that that decision wasn't there for me to be able to make. And it breaks my heart that someone took that, especially a young person. If you're terminal, if you do have a terminal illness, I understand maybe you should have that right to make that decision. That's not up to me. But for someone who's not terminal, I think it's absolutely horrible. There are other ways. There's morphine and there's whatever other medications that they can give you to help. There's depression medications to help you feel better about yourself. We can go to learn how to deal with blindness, etc. But to take your life, life is a one-time thing. It's the only chance we get. And yes, at times it gets hard for everybody. Everybody suffers, some maybe more than others. But I've had a difficult life, but I would never want the opportunity to take my own life. I believe in God also. I know that may have a lot to do with it, but I also respect myself enough that I would not want even to be given that opportunity.
And I thank you for sharing what you know about your medical conditions and what you're dealing with. But this is, to me, just keeps illustrating that it's a very, very individual decision, right? It's a very individual thing. And, you know, for you, that's not what you would do. But I guess we don't know what God's going to hand us, right? We don't know what's coming down the road. You know, the older you get, you start to look at your parents, your grandparents, you're like, oh, okay, so that's genetic. That's in the mix. Maybe that's what it's going to be. And you start to look at it. And I just think you start to think of things like about things like this. And, you know, some people want it as an option. Laura, thank you. Let's very quickly, Charles in Minnesota. I've got about a minute and a half, Charles. So go. Charles. Yeah, Charles, go.
Okay, I'm not in Minnesota. I'm in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry about that. You can't get good help these days.
I just wanted to say, I'm in favor of assisted suicide as long as it's not for things like depression or insecurities, things like that, that can be dealt with. But I also think that we spend too much time and effort trying to prolong people's lives with medication that till they get to the point where they want to commit suicide. And we need to draw a line in the sand and say, beyond this point, we're not doing them any favors, and stop doing that too.
Yeah, but see, because of lawsuits, doctors are going to do everything the family wants, even if you have a living will. If there's a family member who says, no, I want the fetus, whatever, they're going to do it now because they're so afraid of the lawsuit down the road, because we sue for everything. And even if the lawsuit gets tossed out, it still costs them money. It still costs them the mental anguish of having to go through depositions and everything else. So a lot of that stuff is taken out of our hands more and more. So I think there a lot needs to be looked at our medical system as well. And I think, unfortunately, this is separate from that, which is really odd. Charles, thank you. I appreciate you joining me. Charles, not from Minnesota. Charles. All right. We're out of time. Thank you so much for the calls on this. I do appreciate it. Wish we had more time to continue the conversation. But I think it is something that we're all going to have it. And especially if you have elderly parents, you have to sit down and talk to them about a living will, you know, or the will. And hey, what would you like if you wind up, you know, God forbid, in the hospital or something? A tough conversations to have, and a lot of people don't want to have them, but this is just another layer on that you have to have that conversation. Thank you so much, Mary Walter. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.